Hi, my name is Jesse Ceramelli-Lo, and I'm interviewing Renee Ceramelli. Today is November 29th, 2015. Hello, Nanny.
Hello, Jesse.
Hi. So, when and where were you born?
Oh, my goodness. I was born March 11, 1931, a few years ago.
All right. So, where were you born?
I was born in San Francisco.
All right, but you spent a lot of your early years in France?
I grew up in France. I left San Francisco with my parents in 1935, and I came back to San Francisco in 1950.
So what was it like growing up in France?
Well, I didn't know anything else, so it was wonderful. Although it was during the war, it was, you know, it depends on the family you have and everything. So I say it was a good growing up.
What differences did you notice from when you came back to America from France?
Oh, I had a father that loved California. And so I grew up thinking that California was a wonderful place. And as far as I'm concerned, it was.
Mm-hmm. So how did the German occupation affect your family at all, or friends of your family?
Well, it did. We were occupied from 1940. I lived in Lourdes first, I should say. I live in Lourdes. It's a town, a Catholic town, almost at the border of Spain and France, mm-hmm. and in the mountains. And At the beginning of the war, the Germans were not there. But then when the Vichy France fell, then they occupied all of France. And so they were in our town. And they were a presence. I mean, they occupied all the hotels that we had there. They were in the streets. It was hard, I think, for the grown-ups more than the children. But I don't know. Turn it off for a second. I don't know if you...
All right.
So in 1940, I think it was 1940. It could have been the end of 1939. I'm not sure. No, 1940. The Germans came. And like I said, they occupied all the hotels. They were not bad, you know, with the population. Mm-hmm. But they had strict rules. Everybody had to be in their homes by 7 o'clock at night. If you were not, you were shot if you didn't answer when they called you, or you were put in prison. So in that way, it was strict. As a child, you know, we went to bed before 7 o'clock, so we never got involved with that part of it. My father's best friend was in the Maquis, we call, and gee, I forgot the name in English. The Maquis was the people the underground, mm-hmm. that were fighting the Germans on their own, and most of them were in the mountains, and so he had a lot of friends that were fighting the Germans. The one thing I remember is he had a priest that was a friend of his in the pharmacist up the street, and every night at whatever time it was, they would come to my house and kind of put the radio on to BBC. You were not supposed to have that kind of radio, but they did, and they listened to the BBC, so they were aware of what was happening in the war. And I don't know, the food situation was bad. You had to wait in line, you had tickets for food, like here. Mm-hmm. And then you had tickets for clothes and all that kind of thing. And my mother, every once in a while, she was busy, so she would send me with a little gallon, like made of metal, and I would go online, and they would fill it up with milk, depending how many you were in the family. The bread, the same. The meat, we didn't have too much meat. But again, we lucked out because a lot of our family live in the country. And they had ranches and they had farms. And so they would take the train every once in a while to feed us, to bring us food, you know.
Yeah.
And so we had, every once in a while, we had eggs. I remember once they brought eggs and flour to my mother, and she says, I'm going to make you something I ate when I was little in California. And she made dollar pancakes. And to this day, I remember that dinner of eating those little dollar pancakes. And we had to count them because we had to have the same amount. So anyway, so it was, we didn't have butter for it, but we had the pancakes. So it was really good. We had honey on it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things like that were happening. In school, we would collect, like if our parents had cans that they could spare, we would can food to send to the soldiers that were in prison by the Germans. And I mean, little things like that, we were involved, but my parents didn't involve us too much. When I was, God, how old was I? 1945, when Normandy mm-hmm. came, and the American and the English came. We got up in the morning, and my father had put the French flag out, and then up and down the street, all the flags were out. The Germans were still there, but they were good Germans. I mean, the head of the German garrison that was in Lourdes was Catholic, and he was told to blow up all the sanctuaries in Lourdes. And he didn't. Mm-hmm. He had put the charges, I guess, ready to be blown up, but he would not do it. And so that was good, because it's still the way it was then, now. And let's see, what else would happen? I don't know, we were given, like you do here, you know, you do community service. So at school, we were given people that were by themselves, and we would go see them, visit them. And I remember the little lady that I went to see every day, and my mother would make a little extra food, and I would bring it to her. And when I left Lourdes, I went to say goodbye to her. She was an old lady, probably not as old as I am now, but well, I thought she was very old. And she gave me a jar of buttons. She had nothing else to give. But buttons that, you like know, that are loose from, little buttons from clothes. Huh. And she had given me a whole jar of buttons as a gift. I thought it was wonderful. But anyway, so what else?
Okay. So did you feel like you were in any real danger?
No. Or? No. No, I never was. The Germans were there. I remember what my father telling us. Don't accept anything from them. You know. And every once in a while, we'll go by her hotel, and they would call to us, you want a piece of cake? And I would say no, and I really wanted it, because we didn't have cake at home. But I said no. One time, I went down the hill where we live, and I had a trottinette. You know, the thing you put your foot on and push with the other?
Huh?
What do you call it?
I'm not familiar.
A scooter?
Oh, yeah.
Little scooter? Yeah. Is it called a scooter?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had a scooter. I was very proud of it. My father had made it with one of their friends for Christmas. And the head of the Germans say, he asked me if he could borrow it. And he was a big man. And I didn't want him to have it. But I said, okay. So he went down in front of his troop. He went down the hill. And then he had another soldier bring it out to me. And after that, I never took it out again, because I was afraid he was going to break it. Anyway, so they were fun things, you know. Mm-hmm. But and it was hard for the adults, I said, because they had to look for food. I remember my mother wanted to knit sweaters for us, and so she knew of a farm outside the town. And we went to the with her, and the lady had, she had made some yarn, you know, mm-hmm. with the sheep wool and everything. So she had made some yarn. But we were not allowed to bring anything in town. So my mother had put a string around herself under her coat. And then so we left, she hung it came in big skeins, the yarn. So she had hung it around the herself on the string, and then she walked. She waddled with all that yarn. Anyway, but we got, you know, we would take rice and go to farms and see if they had a little extra milk. Or we didn't drink a lot of milk. Well, first, we didn't have it. But second, it wasn't like here. You didn't drink that much milk, but you made things with milk, or you put it in coffee, or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like I said, it wasn't hard for us because our parents made it. So, you know, and we were not in the north of France. The one thing that felt really bad is that a lot of my cousins that were young men left France through the Pyrenees. And they escaped through Spain. And from Spain, they went to Morocco. And from Morocco, they went to England. And from England, they came back into France. You know, so it was sad seeing them go. And some of them never came back. But we missed them, you know. And another thing that happened that my father had to explain to me, although I was, I think, about 10 at the time, I made friends with Sonia. Sonia was a Jewish girl that had come from north of France to the south. But then the Germans came, and nothing was said. I didn't know any of this was happening, what the Jews, all that kind of stuff. I didn't know any of that. And then one morning, every morning, I would go to her house, and her mother had a little, tiny little cup of coffee for us on the table, and so I would drink it with her, and then we walked to school. And one morning I got there, and the door was open, and the cups of coffee were on the table, her mom's and Sonia and mine, and they were not there. And so I called, and I called, and I started getting scared. Don't ask me why, I don't know. Started getting scared. So I ran home, and my father said, "Don't go back. Don't go back. Go to school." And then when he came back at night, I said, "Did you find Sonia? She didn't come to school." And she said, "No, they're gone."
Oh, wow.
And to this day, he never knew if they had been taken by the Germans or if they had escaped. I remember later him saying that the coffee was still warm in the cup. So they had just left, and they left everything. So the story was that maybe the Maquis or the underground had realized that they were going to be taken and just took them away and maybe send them to Spain. I don't know. But anyway, so that was one sad thing because I really like her. We were good friends. And so there were a few little things like that happened. But I think my mom and dad, my mother was American. You know, she was born here. My father was French, and he always wanted to go back. You know, he died before we did, but we came back.
So why did you come back to
go back to France?
Yeah.
Well, my mother was 19 when she went to France with her mom and dad. Her father had never been able to go to France before because he left when he was 17. And he didn't make the army. You were supposed to go in the army for so long. And see, if he had gone to France to visit after he married here and had my mother, he would have been put in prison. I mean, or so they thought. So anyway, so the first time he was able to go back was in 1926. And they went on a trip. And there, my father was in the French army. And he was, at the time, and he had been in Palestine. What was called Palestine then. He was in the, I guess you called it MPs here, the military police.
Okay.
And so he was there for a while. So he came on vacation. He met my mother. They fell in love. And a year later, he quit his post. And he came to San Francisco to marry my mother. And they were here. They got married in 1927. And they were here until 1935 when we left. And we left because, in the meantime, my grandfather had died. My mother's dad had died. And my grandmother was very sick, and she wanted to go to France to be buried there with her husband. They had sent him back home. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we went, but the war came. Well, first my father bought, he thought, well, by the time I was six to go to school, they would come back. They had a hotel in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We took my grandmother to France, and my father bought a store in Lourdes. And then they were talking about the war, and of course the French never knew. They made tunnels and everything alongside Germany,
yeah,
called La Ligne Maginot, and they thought no German would never go through. So when the war started, nobody worried, right? They didn't realize that they hadn't made it alongside Belgium, and they didn't make it down far. So, you know,
yeah,
the Germans came around it. They didn't have to go through it. Anyway, we didn't know that at the time. And so my father thought, you know, it's going to pass. You know, it's one of these skirmish again. It's going to pass. And it didn't. And so then we were stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't come back home.
Wow.
And my mother had to become French citizen. Otherwise, her and the two of us, because my sister and I were both American, we would have been put in a camp near Paris, near Neuilly. And so my mother became French citizen. She voted, and she lost her American citizenship. But we stayed home then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we went back.
So,
and that's why we couldn't come back.
So when you did come back, what was it like transitioning in terms of, like, schooling? And 'cause
schooling. I was finished high school in mm-hmm. France. I had finished high school. Always wanted to be a nurse, but over there my father kept saying, you know, I went into commercial study where you'd study accounting.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it would be here, and accounting. And so I finished school, and my father had bought another store at the time, and I was going to run the store and all that kind of stuff, you know, and I hated it. I wanted to be a nurse. And my father said, a nurse is a glorified maid. And so when I came here, it was wonderful because I had an aunt here that was a nurse. Well, a cousin, really, that was a nurse. And when she found out that I wanted to become a nurse, I didn't speak English. You have to realize that. So mm-hmm. for that summer in 1950, I went to school to learn English at George Washington High School in San Francisco. They had an Americanization class. And so I learned. And one summer, I learned English enough to go into nurse's training in September of 1950. And I graduated, I have to say, with honors in 1953. And I loved it, you know, and I loved it. So for me coming here, first it was wonderful. There is Christmas, and it's sunny. It's a beautiful day in San Rafael, and it was Christmas. And at home, it was deep in snow, and so there were a lot of changes. I love the people here. I became very much a Californian.
Mm-hmm.
Things were good here. Things were good, because I did what I wanted to do all my life that I wasn't been able to do in France.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister finished high school here. She went to Lincoln High School in San Francisco. And so we did well.
So when did you first meet your husband?
Met my husband. I was in nurses training, and we had a consulate, French consulate there. And because I was French descent, and there was another girl in my class, we were invited with two of our friends to go to a dance for the 14th of July. That's our 4th of July in France. And so the 14th of July, we went there, and we were dancing, and he was in the Air Force in Canada. He spoke French. He took me to the dance. And then I'm dancing, and this handsome man comes and says, "Hi, Cappy." And I was nobody talked. In France, the way I was raised, you had to be introduced to someone before you can talk to them. And Cappy was short for Capdeville, and only my friends in nurses training, you know, at the hospital would call me Cappy. So I didn't answer. I thought he was a very impolite young man. And then the young man that took me to the dance took me to the nurse's home after the dance. And I had a really good time. And he said goodbye and he was going back to Canada. And this person there that I had met at the dance comes and says, "I don't like your boyfriend." I think to myself, how impolite that man is. How awful he was. And that was it. Okay, so then about 2 weeks later, my girlfriend at the nurse's home said, "My friend Maurice has a friend called Joe that really would love to meet you. He met you at the dance." And I said, "I didn't meet anybody at the dance that I didn't know." And I never thought of him. And then so they said, "Well, I'll meet them, but if they come to the nurse's home." See how square I was. And so when he walked in, I said, "Oh, no." He was with Maurice, you know. But we started talking, and he was so nice. He was drunk. He had drank too much champagne, I think. So anyway, so that's how we met, and we started going out, and we got married in 1953, 62 years ago.
How did he propose to you? How did he propose to you?
How did he propose to me? Well, we went out for a long time, and he had a couple of other girlfriends, and it was fine with me. And then I started falling in love with him, but I never said anything. But his mother really liked me, and it was wonderful. Anyway, one day she said, "If you're not going to marry that girl, you leave her alone." And so we talked, laughing about it, and I said, "She's right. You know, we've been going out together for about a year and a half. So, you know, make your decision what you want to do and then come back." And I was a tough young lady. And so so he didn't come back for almost 2 weeks. And I said, "Oh my, I blew it. You know, I shouldn't have said that." And then he came back and he proposed in the car. We were going to the beach. He always bought me I love ice cream when I came here. Oh, that's one thing that you had here that I loved. First, it was ice cold milk from the refrigerator and ice cream. In France, when you had ice cream, you had little bits. But here, they give you a big scoop of ice cream. So we had. So he took me for a chocolate sundae at the beach in San Francisco. They had a really good ice cream place. So he used to take me there for my. So he took me there, and on the way driving, he asked me to marry him. And I said yes. So that's how it happened.
So do you remember when you learned that he got drafted?
Yeah, we got married in November 53. And he was called. He was going to be 25. They couldn't call you after you're 25. So he was going to be 25 in June. And they called him in May. So he was in the army during Korea, but he never went to Korea. He went in the army for 2 years, you know, and then they wanted him to re-enlist, but he had done his thing, so he didn't want to. And, you know, we had just been married a couple of months, no, 4 months, 5 months, I guess, you know, so he wanted to come home. He had bought a little house for us, and so he came home.
So were you worried that he would be sent to, like, was it a real possibility for him to be sent to
Korea?
Korea
at the time, or? Yeah. It was during the Korea War. And, yeah, he went to Fort Ord, and he was there. But then they needed engineers in the engineer corps that they were building up. And so he was there helping them with paperwork and all that kind of stuff as an engineer. And then they needed, well, I don't know, somebody to work in an office. I forgot a little bit what it was. And so they sent him to the Presidio. So he lived for 4 months at home, being in the army, at the Presidio. And then he went back to Fort Ord, and then he was in charge of that office. So he never went back, and we were very happy.
Mm-hmm. So what's some of, like, funny stories or your favorite memories raising your two children?
Oh, God, I loved every minute of it. I love every minute of it. Favorite stories? I don't know. My son was born first, and he was a little prince in the family because he was the first one of the Sirimeli to be born. So he was he called himself the king of La Honda because he was the only one that went there with his grandparents. And then my daughter was born, and I knew she was going to be a daughter. And I don't know, I had so much fun with the kids. Mm-hmm. I was lucky that I didn't work for until my son was 10, you know. And I went to work because I wanted to go to work. Mm-hmm. And I found a job at the university here in Belmont, and I worked there for 37 years. I was the director of health services, and I loved every minute of it. So I had a really good life. Oh, sorry. Move my hands too much.
So who had the greatest impact? What single person has had the greatest impact on your life or was a role model for you throughout your life?
I think my father. I adore my father. He died very young. I was only 15. But he was fun. He loved history. He knew 7 languages. He was really involved in things. Underneath, you will never know, like for the underground. He didn't join the underground, but he was one of the base. Not that he did a lot for them, but he was there for them. I don't know. He skied when nobody else really skied up in the Pyrenees. He made his first skis with the wine.
Like the wine barrel?
The wine barrel. He cut 2 wine barrels and tied them to his feet. He came back all bloody and everything. Those were his first skis. He had made them. He lived in a beautiful place up in the mountains. It's gorgeous. He was a very gentle man, but he was a very strong man. And Joe is very much like him, and so is Gary. But I think of all of them, I think your mother is the one that would be the closest to him. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
The way she is, and she gets involved in things. She gets excited about things. She's, you know.
She's very just family-oriented while still very independent.
Very much. He wanted us to ski. My mother said, oh, it wasn't for girls. He wanted me to play the accordion. And my mother, because in the war, you couldn't find piano teachers. Piano teachers were mostly men at that time for some reason. But then there were none of it during the war, so we never learned that. He wanted us to learn English, and she didn't want to because we could be arrested and we couldn't take it in school, so I took Spanish. So he had a car, and an officer in the French army, when the war started, came and said they would bring it back to him after the war. Well, we never saw it again. He had a motorcycle, and see, your mother,
yeah,
motorcycle. You know, he was not a daredevil, but he tried things, you know.
Adventurous,
yes. Yeah, he was what they call a Renaissance man, or what I call a Renaissance man. Yeah, he was wonderful. So morals, all the stuff that he told me, I live by. Mm-hmm. And one day your sister said, you know, he must be your guardian angel. And I think he was, mm-hmm. You know, and is.
Yeah.
And is.
So what piece of advice do you have for future generations? What specific wisdom do you have?
Oh, wisdom. Share? Oh, gee. Yeah. You would think I would have a lot of it by my age, huh? Well, you know, live your life. Do what you think is right. Mm-hmm. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody, just go ahead and do it. Be very honest. Because, like George Judy says, if you lie, you have to remember that you lie because it'll come back to bite you anyway. So just be honest, just like your grandfather, and my father. I mean, they were very honest men. They didn't cheat in taxes, not because they thought they were going to get caught. It's just not something you did. Mm-hmm. They were very honest people, very honest men, and they lived well, and they were happy. So, and trust. Trust is something that is very hard to get come by, and once you lose it, it's very hard to get it back. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be again, very honest and trust. And enjoy life. Every morning say, what a wonderful day. Your mother used to get mad at me. I used to go and wake them up and say, rise and shine. And I don't remember very many mornings where I was not happy waking up. And and she used to get so mad because she didn't want to wake up. So anyway, so the rise and shine bit was funny too.
All right, Al. Thank you for letting me interview you, Amy.
I talk too much.
Love you.
I love you too.